This is Get a Real Job, the podcast devoted to people who choose risk over safe bets, who pursue their passion against all odds and are doing what they want, how they want, despite people and sometimes the voices in their own heads telling them they're nuts.
When the field that I wanted to work in didn't exist, I created it.
The only thing you have to decide is how hard do you want to work.
I really never went into the design of the restaurant of not succeeding. One way or another, I was going to succeed.
I'm your host, Dan Bova, editorial director of Entrepreneur.com. Thanks for listening. And now, get a real job.
So, you ever meet someone who is so damn cool they make you angry? Well, I am furious at today's guest. So, Mick is a DJ, a style influencer, a branding guru, a tech investor. He spun records at events for the likes of Jay-Z, Michelle Obama, Prince. He's worked with brands like Airbnb, Beats by Dre, MasterCard, and many, many more. He's here today in the decidedly uncool podcast booth here at Entrepreneur Offices. And we're going to learn if it isn't too late for this 46-year-old host to one day be a cool kid.
I mean, I'm about to be 42, so
all right.
I'm still waiting for my cool potion to arrive via Amazon Prime.
So. Well, Mick, welcome so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah. Thanks for coming in on a freezing cold day. So, a professional DJ, let's start there. I know you've done a million different other things, but like, how does, to take a step back. All right. So we're approximately the same age. I'm a little bit older than you. When I was in college, I bought something called DJ in a Box, and it had two turntables and a mixing board. And I didn't become a professional DJ. So what was the difference between me and you?
I skipped the box aspect of it and bought the real shit. So that was helpful. That was probably problem number one. Shit probably didn't work.
Never trust something in a box. But go ahead.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's a whole other. Yeah. This is the Entrepreneur magazine
right here.
I'm sure a couple floors up in this building, there's probably some other publication that we can go visit. But anyways, For me, it was like, I got real DJ equipment. And I was a drummer before I was a DJ. And I couldn't take my drums to the dorm room because the dorm room was half the size of this podcast room.
Right.
And so I was like, well, I could condense my musical, you know, ability. If you could drum, you can DJ. You see that a lot with celebrities, drummers and stuff. It's, if you DJ, you can't really drum. I mean, you can, but it's like probably easier learning curve than like a civilian.
Right.
But if you can drum, you could teach yourself to DJ in like a week.
Right.
And so I did. There was no internet at the time. This was like 96. So there was like no books. There was no like, where I grew up in the middle of Ohio, there was no like how to DJ book in the library.
Right.
I was just like, figure this shit out.
Right.
And what's actually really cool, I realized this as an adult when I look back on it, I learned an interesting business lesson. I had a Michael Jordan rookie card. At the time.
Okay.
I didn't really take care of it because I got it in like elementary school, but I flipped it in high school as I was graduating to get the money for my turntables. And it was worth like $600 at the time. I think it's worth like maybe $6,000. But I always would look, every time I would walk into a Barnes & Noble, remember those? Like I would like find the like Beckett basketball card magazine. And I would just, like as my career grew, the card went from like $600 to like $2,000 to like $3,000. Now it's like $6,000.
Yeah.
I'm like, I got a pretty fucking good return on my investment.
Yeah, that's true.
I just looked it up.
That is true.
I love that story. Now it's like you see like Gary Vee like going back into like baseball cards and all this stuff now. And I want to be like, dude, you're not going to believe what basketball cards did for my career.
Yeah, right.
Anyways, I got the turntables and I actually learned a lot about rebranding because I was like a nerd in high school. I was like a super fat, super dorky. Parents were weird. I worked at my grandpa's pharmacy. No girls wanted to talk to me senior year in high school. Nobody even wanted to sit next to me on our band field trip. My mom drove me to the field trip and drove me home because I didn't even have anybody sit next to me on the bus.
Oh, man.
This is like June.
Oh, Jesus.
August 30th or whatever, 3 months later, not even 3 months later, I walk into the dorm room with two turntables, not in a box, two crates of records, which were box-like.
Yeah.
And, coolest kid in the dorm.
Wow.
And so, you know, when you talk, I didn't know that was rebranding. I didn't know that was marketing. I didn't know that was PR. I didn't know that was brand perception. Those words didn't exist to me.
Yeah.
But what's fascinating, I went to college and I started doing like a finance degree. And a year or two in, I realized like I really suck at this. And I switched to marketing. And then when I look back at my, and I went back on MBA marketing and all sorts of other stuff. But when I look at my life, it all kind of like the genesis was that moment. I didn't realize me reinventing myself that summer was personal branding. It was marketing 101 before I took a marketing class. And that set the tone for my whole life.
Wow. That's incredible. You're right though. That's such a clean slate, that college thing. You could leave all of that garbage behind.
Oh yeah.
And then for some people, it's the opposite. They've built this incredible brand for them in high school, and now like no one knows and no one cares. You know, you're like starting from scratch. So that's pretty awesome that you were able to like kind of flip that for yourself. So you started going for finance, and you found that you didn't like that. You got
my aptitude
and into marketing. And did you, obviously you've more than excelled in that in your life, but did you immediately say, like, this is what I'm going to do with myself? Influencer didn't exist back then.
No, but, you know, I would actually make the argument that DJs were the original influencers because our job is to influence people with our tastes. And it's not like if you're an actor or a movie star where you make one thing a year, right? I'm doing it for I don't DJ that much. I mean, I DJ a lot, but like when I was in my 20s and in college, it was like, I would do everything. So, you know, I'm 3-5 nights a week. My job is to make you do whatever the fuck it is I want you to do. I can make you fight. I can make you fall in love. I can make you sweat. I can make you leave.
Yeah.
I can do whatever I want based on how I choose these songs.
Yeah.
That's crazy.
That is
crazy. If I do my job well, the bar is going to do double.
Yeah.
If I do my job bad, the bar is going to do half.
Right.
There's a lot of financial swaying here.
Yeah, you know? That's
true. So I learned that early on.
Yeah.
And it was interesting.
That's incredible. And, you know, I think there's people who don't know much about it. It's like, what does a DJ do? They're just playing people's records. What's the big deal?
Well, there's a lot of guys that just do that, too.
But, and then I would say, you know, go to somewhere where there's a bad DJ and you know it right away. It's just like, what are they playing? This sucks. And just like you said, you just want to leave. It just puts you in a bad mood. So that's pretty amazing that you, like, realize it. So have you, like... As experiments in real time, did you like see what can I do to this room right now?
I'll tell you a story. I've only told this a few times because it's horrible, but it's awesome. There was a time I was done. So I finished school. I didn't want to be a DJ. It was fun. I loved it. I thought I was gonna like grow up, right? And then like I decided to take a year off and just DJ and figure out what I wanted to do, and it started going really well. So I ended up using it to pay for grad school. I was able to do grad school with like no debt, no loans. Took an extra year, but like it was like, you know, and while I was doing that, I was on the radio in Cleveland doing like a drive time mix. Like, you know, when you hear DJs mix on the radio, and I was doing clubs and school, I had a lot going on. Mm. And I did a party I didn't want to do. The radio station would book us for these events. This is like smack dab in the middle of Ohio, like in Cleveland. And like, my God, this had to be like 03, 04, maybe 02. And it wasn't like what I would normally get paid. It wasn't what I would normally want to do. But you had to do it because you were part of like this ecosystem, and you want to stay in the ecosystem of the radio station because it provided PR. And so they booked me at a skating rink,
okay,
for kids, for like high school kids,
sure,
to play. It was a brutal gig. Like the DJ booth was all fucked up. Like everything was bad, and it was like way out in the way. And so. I realized at the time if I play a few certain records that were out at back to back to back that were super aggressive. This is when hip hop started changing and like the South was coming up and like it was like Master P and No Limit Records and kids with like gold tanks on their shirt and stuff.
Right.
If I played four of those records in a row, the aggression would be so high they would fight. And so I did that. And there were kids, I never forget, I feel bad now as a parent. There was a kid that took his roller skates off, swinging around like with a lasso, like Wonder Woman or like She-Ra or some shit. And just they started fighting, and they canceled the party.
Wow.
And I got to go home. I still got my, I think it was like $300 maybe for the day. It was bad. But I was like, this is some powerful shit.
Yeah.
I was like, let's try to use this for good.
For good.
It's nice to know I had that ability.
Yeah, yeah. Wow. I'm very glad you
went. I'd love to know what happened to that kid.
We went superhero instead of supervillain. That's great. You know, and we'll get into the bigger things that you're doing, but I'm just interested, you know, those first couple of steps, those first gigs, did they just kind of happen and then it started to snowball? Or Did you have a plan?
I had no plan. I was just like, you know, let me do this as much as I can to pay for school. And then at that point, I was going to grow up, right?
Right.
Be like, I finished grad school at 25. I was like, this is like when it's going to happen. But you know, life, when you look back at life, right, there's, you just see how different no's become yeses and opportunities come and things that you don't realize how like the world evolves. So by me having to hustle for grad school, right, I just DJed everything. I just described like how much I was working. So I became really, really popular in Cleveland. And I was like, there was a point in it, you know, it wasn't always like that, where I was the go-to person for everything. Because it was not a small city, but it wasn't New York.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and we only had 4 or 5 like peak things you could do. Yeah, like 2 clubs that were the best clubs. There was like the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I did all their stuff. There was like a House of Blues that just opened. I did all their stuff because I lived in the building. So it was a great moment for me. I got like plum choosing, right?
Yeah, right.
And that was going on for me at the time. And what happened was during that time, LeBron got drafted by the Cavs.
Okay.
And I saw an opportunity to make everybody's experience better. And so, you know, the NBA wasn't like the hip-hop infused league that it is now. Like, mm-hmm. if you just watch All-Star Weekend, it's like, I was out there, it was like the greatest thing ever. It was not like that 15 years ago.
Right.
So I went to the Cavs. Now, keep in mind, I'm still finishing grad school, and I'm in, like, marketing MBA mode.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm going to go to these, I mean, just the whitest, oldest Cavalier people in the world. Like, you know, it was just not.
Right.
It was not the problems at all remotely fixed, but the league is in a much more understanding space now than it was then, you know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, yo, you need me. And they're like, what? You know, we're playing like, you know, Cleveland was like the home of rock and roll. We're playing like Bob Seger and shit. Like, it's just like Elvis. You know, even their mascot, Moondog, was named after a legendary rock and roll DJ. And I'm like, yo, we need to step this up. And I'm like, your guy. And so I made them this whole, I mean, I wish I could find it would be awesome to find it. It probably sucked. And I was like, listen, I do all the radio stuff. I do all the clubs. I do all the stuff. Like, if you're going to have somebody do it, it should be me.
Yeah.
And when this young man, who was 18 at the time, comes into your organization, he's going to want to hear Jay-Z. He's not going to want to hear, you know, We Will Rock You. I mean, he's going to want to hear that too, but we didn't mix that with the Jay-Z.
Yeah, yeah.
So they agreed.
Wow.
And they gave me like a trial. And I don't even think they paid me. If they paid me for the first year, it was like negligent.
Yeah.
But I lived a block away, so it was no big deal. And it went well. And then they brought me on full time, and I did that for like 4 or 5 years.
Wow.
And so from doing that, I, of course, developed relationships with like LeBron and all his guys and all like some NBA players. And then I also developed brand relationships with like the Nikes and the Gatorades and the Pepsis and, you know, you name it. Anybody that came to Cleveland, they were going to ultimately end up at the game, and then they were going to end up at my party that night.
Wow.
So I just leveraged that.
Yeah.
You know, because I was able to provide them entertainment. And then I tried to be a remotely personable guy. And I was like super fat at the time. So I was like, let's just go out to eat. Do you like chicken fingers? You know? Do you like French fries? I live above House of Blues. They have like beer dipped. Like, it was awesome. Which was how I ended up like 270.
Yeah.
But it gave me my career, you know? And
Mick is not 270 at this moment.
Yeah. And ladies, I'm single there's one ab under my small stomach.
I could see it.
But by next year, when I marry some lucky listener, it's gonna be like there'll be like at least 3 abs. I'm gonna come back and we'll give a follow up.
Just a
visual. Can't you
wait? We'll keep an ab tracker. But, yeah, sure.
So yeah, so I didn't realize this was happening at the time. This was like survival mode. This is like, I'm in grad school. I got to pay these bills. I don't want to have debt. I don't want to have loans. I don't know what I want to do in life. I didn't realize what I was doing was creating brand partnerships, creating networking, doing relationship building. Influencing while still doing my creative job at night. And I manage my own career. That's what most people don't realize. Most people who are blessed to be at my level, whatever level that really is, like have these teams.
Yeah.
And I'm just starting to build that now, like literally like a month ago. So I was doing all this and I'm grateful for that process because
so
it
that
gave
big
me the
entourage you walked in with earlier.
And Jason.
Yeah, there was no one. He was carrying a plastic bag with a Gatorade in it.
But what was in it? Pepto-Bismol.
Pepto-Bismol, there you go.
How about that? There's a secret for your audience. Nobody knows.
There you go. Okay, sorry, I didn't mean to cut you off there.
No, it's all good. No, but so what I was doing was building a business.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. I'm literally dealing with Fortune 100 companies and billionaire owners and millionaire athletes, and playing in front of 17,000 people at the Quicken Loans Arena while doing my night job and my day job, which was like school. I didn't realize I had like, these were like, nobody called it side hustles. I mean, look at what Entrepreneur Mag was in. It was like a franchise magazine.
Right, you should buy
this McDonald's.
Right.
Like, and then you should buy this McDonald's.
Yeah.
It wasn't, none of this stuff was cool. None of this stuff was like, what, you know, and then that world over the last 15, 20 years has shifted into the new rock star world.
Right.
And we've all been able to, you know, profit from it and grow from it and still, and I didn't realize that's what I was doing. So when I finished grad school, I was kind of like, wait a minute, like I kind of did this and I have like this education. I don't remember anything I learned, but I knew there was like some certificate that I don't even know where it is anymore.
Right.
And I was like, this is really interesting. Maybe this is what I'm supposed to do.
So was there, can you like pinpoint a moment or a conversation you had where you were like light bulb, like, oh, wait a minute, this is what I'm going to do. This is going to be, this is the fork in the road.
Yeah, I mean, maybe not one specific. I definitely remember like getting that graduate diploma and feeling like, man, I did this on my own.
Right.
I did this while working like four jobs. I did this with no help, no scholarships, and nobody else did that. Or they had companies that were like paying for they worked. You know, in Cleveland, we had like Progressive Insurance.
Yeah.
Like they paid. You know, I didn't have any of that, and so that to me was like that moment. So from that moment, I was like, okay. I'm going to give this a couple years, and we're going to try to maximize this. The end goal would be to get to New York.
Right.
The worst case is I just go get a job.
Yeah, yeah.
Make like 120 in Cleveland, which is like a million in New York.
Right.
And, you know, I had a triplex downtown Cleveland with a roof deck for $1,200.
Wow.
It was amazing. Three-story, like, living room. It was
You can't.
No. You know, I'm sure it went up since then.
Yeah.
It was an amazing time.
Wow.
And then so I basically I leveraged all that, and then I ended up here a couple years later, and here we are.
So when you were kind of making that decision, were people in your life, your teachers, your advisors, your family, were they like, wait, what are you doing? Or was everyone totally on board?
No, of course nobody was on board.
Yeah.
Because you couldn't put on a sitcom and see a DJ, and you didn't see DJs on like Subway ads.
Right.
Celebrities weren't DJs at the time. To your point, two stories. My grandparents, my mom and my dad were always very supportive of me for sure. Because they would just were. My grandparents, who helped me pay for my undergrad, thought I was like, they would never say it, but they eventually, and they're dead so I could say it. Now they thought I was a fuck up. Like they loved me.
Uh-huh.
But they thought I was like, they didn't understand.
Right.
And it was funny because it took maybe till, my God, 2010, I went back home and the local Youngstown, Ohio newspaper did an article on me. It wasn't like all the shit I've done and the world traveling and the celebrities and like all these things that you would think would make them feel that I did it. It was my picture in like the hometown paper.
Yeah.
It's like perfect, right?
Absolutely.
They say print is dead, but grandparents.
Yeah.
and they loved it. And then from that moment on, our little interference was over because they got it now. And I was like, I don't even understand how this works, but I'm just going to go with this. And the other thing was when I was in grad school, I believe it was my final year of grad school, I had a professor, I don't remember the person's name. And I remember them telling me in front of the class, like, you need to, I got super marginalized in this person's class. I remember I was in a group with like two or three girls and they had like jobs in quotes.
Sure.
You know, like I don't know what they did, pharmaceutical sales or like, you know,
yeah.
pen pushing. Like I don't know what people do or did. But they had like jobs. And
yeah.
I had my like what was probably making more money than them, but it was like a non-traditional, especially at the time, job.
Sure.
They didn't want me in their group.
Oh.
Okay. Like I was like the dude in the Bible, like with the one leg coming down the street with the shawl, the leper, you know, with the coronavirus. That was me. And I remember they would actually like make shit up, like I wasn't contributing.
Wow.
It was a huge, interesting like study on how people think,
yeah.
especially when you think about like this could go on a whole bunch of social topics we don't have to get into, but I was like, this is crazy. Like you're literally, I don't want to use the word discriminate because that's a much bigger word for bigger things. But you're segmenting me because of my career.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous. And again, if this is now, I'm an entrepreneur. I took a Harvard class and I'm friends with the professor, and she tells everyone in the world about me because like she thinks what I do is cool.
Yeah.
But 15 years ago,
right?
I was the leper.
Yeah.
And so, you know, the teacher was like, "You need to make a decision. You either need to like just do this dumb creative shit, right? Or you need to go get a real job. Mm. But you can't do both. And then it's awesome how it like obviously worked out and I've done both and I've intertwined them well. And then I went back to speak at the school and I got paid to speak at the school.
Okay, nice.
Not a lot, but it was nice. And I remember I told that story and I don't remember who the teacher was, but there was so many faculty like in the back. It's like a filled up conference room. And I was looking at all of them and I was
which
one of you, eeny, meeny, miny, moe?
Which one pretended they got a phone call and had to leave?
And the dean's just like sitting in there like, oh, what the fuck's he going to say? But you know what's crazy? There's a guy now who runs this thing. His name is Doan. I don't think he's a dean, but his name is Doan, which is like interesting. And he brought me back, and he's all about the creative, like an entrepreneurial, and he's literally encouraging kids to do their passions and combine it with business and create all that stuff. And it's such a great thing to see, like to go from what somebody told me, which could have deaded my whole shit, to bring me back, and there's a guy encouraging that.
Right.
It's phenomenal.
So what do you think it was that, you know, some people might, I mean, obviously you had pretty good success at that point to kind of back you up to know that you were, or at least to feel like you were on a good path. But what do you think it was that like pushed you through those moments of doubt from outside people to say, you know what, like, screw you. No, this is the way.
I just knew it was working.
Yeah. You know? So it was as simple as it was working.
You know, like you all had loans. I don't.
Right. Exactly.
I don't have rich parents. Like, so like, you know, I was doing well. And I was like, I'm very big in the mindset of, you know, you can have your A, give me the B, but give me all the real world experience. Right.
Sure.
I didn't, again, it's in hindsight makes it sound a lot cleaner cut.
Yeah.
What it was, but it was working. But I distinctively remember walking out of there that night. Like it was like my Michael Jordan getting cut moment. You know, when he didn't make the JV team.
Yeah.
That was definitively my moment.
Motivated. I mean, you know, this happened how long ago?
15 years ago.
15 years ago, and you're talking about it, and I could see
the sweat,
fire building.
But as a parent, I look at my kid, and I'm just like, yo, do what you want.
Right,
I mean, I'm going to course correct you. If you fuck up, I'm going to, we're going to realign the fuck up. But fuck up. What if I didn't want to? What if my parents were like, no, you can't get, you know, what if I didn't ruin all my mom's records because I didn't know a turntable needed a slip mat so you don't screw the record up when you're, you know, I didn't know. My parents let me explore.
That's great. And I don't think I had that in my DJ in a box. So that might have been another one of my problems.
You didn't. I'm sure you didn't.
You know, one thing that I heard you speak about in another podcast. Was this whole balance of people who are smart and people who are talented, and what plays to your favor more in terms of like actually achieving your goal? There are a lot of really talented people in the world, but not everyone makes it to the level that you're at or the level of whatever field.
Smart over talented, for sure. I mean, it's just kind of like what I just said about the B, right?
Yeah.
Like, I'm totally smart enough to get an A, but I'm smart enough to realize that if I get the B, I could do a bunch of other shit.
Right.
That's kind of always been my mind state with DJing, with life. Like, obviously, you want to do everything to your best of your ability, but if I can go to an event and give you I don't want to say, like, I'm not doing a great job, but if I could give you a B-plus musical performance, but I could also make you feel welcome to have me there, make your CEO and CMO feel great that I'm there because I'm talking to them and I'm schmoozing with them while I'm playing. And I'm just like saying hi to everybody and making everybody feel special. The net gain of that event from me adding for your brand, or like I do a lot in the brand space, is higher than me maybe playing four more songs that would be great.
Right.
If I play one song and it brings it down for 2 minutes because your CMO comes up to the booth and I just want to be like, oh, yeah, I saw you on Instagram with your kid on how was the yacht, you know?
Yeah.
Whatever, right? And then he feels great. And then I feel great. And everyone feels great. And then the employees and the customers and the brands and the clients and the audience and the crowd and see him up there having a good time, you know, that's a much more, you know, tentpole moment than me remembering, like, one other song that I'm just going to play in 6 minutes later, right?
Right.
That's a thing of, like, assessing all the different opportunities at that time and choosing. And that has nothing to do with talent. That has to do with, like, not just smarts, but it has to just do with communication and people skills and stuff like that.
So you talked about, you know, so you go from, you achieved a pretty high level of success in Cleveland, and then you decide to go to New York.
Yeah.
So I think there would be a temptation of some people to be like, I rule this city. You know, I don't have to go anywhere. I did it.
Right.
So what was your thinking, and what do you think drove you to sort of say, you know what, I'm bigger than this? Yep. Can you put a beat behind that?
Yeah. You know, for me, it was like I was just tapped out. Mm. There was nothing more that I could do there.
Right.
I hit peak for DJing.
Sure.
So, and there weren't like a lot of brand things going on there, and there wasn't an entertainment industry. So whatever there was, I had done. So I wanted to challenge myself, and I just wanted to also live in a bigger place, and it was just the right move to do. I had a lot of relationships out here.
Yeah.
So I came here with very little money, and. Cleveland money, but very little New York money. Like
right.
4 month runway New York money.
Yeah.
Said, let's go. And when I got here, I just did everything I could that a lot of stuff I didn't want to do. I'm kind of glad social was just starting because I wouldn't have wanted to share some of the events I was doing.
Okay.
But I did them.
Yep.
And you grow and you grow and you grow and you expand. And then I got to a point where, and I was traveling a lot too. I was doing like a lot of, just everything. And at the time, for DJs, at least in the hip hop space, outside of nightlife, your only options for brand things were sneaker related things, liquor companies, sports.
Right.
It wasn't like, 6-7 years after that, I was in Davos on the top of a mountain DJing at World Economic Forum.
Wow.
That couldn't have happened. I'm lucky.
Are billionaires good dancers?
No.
No. Okay.
There's a couple.
Yeah.
Okay. There's a couple, but we won't say that.
Yeah.
Okay. That's a separate show. I just did a party for a hedge fund billionaire guy two 7 days ago, and him and his wife were actually really good dancers. I was very impressed.
Oh, okay.
It was the first time I'd seen it.
Yeah.
Okay. It was very good. I don't know if it was like natural or they took lessons.
Paid Paula Abdul to teach him how to dance.
Yeah, J-Lo.
Yeah.
That's who's going to teach me.
Yeah, yeah.
A-Rod's right. Going to do the video. It'll be fantastic. But yeah. And, I was a beneficiary of the NBA and the whole LeBron bubble and culture kind of like coming to Cleveland at that time. And then the world changing and the NBA opening up and sports. I was able to like leverage a little bit of that when I moved here. I was able to leverage a couple things. DJs got cooler. This was the era of like DJ AM and all of that stuff. And the Vegas thing was happening. So a lot of guys, not me, but like people going to Vegas getting like $100,000, like $1 million.
Wow.
Dating like celebrities.
Right.
Paris Hilton was becoming a DJ.
Right.
People were like, oh, fuck this. This is going to hurt the game. I'm like, no. This is going to help the game. Again, because this is how I think from like a business perspective. I'm like, if some douchebag is going to hire Paris Hilton, not knocking her, to like DJ.
Yeah.
Give her like $1 million to DJ. And she's probably good. I don't even know. I'm just saying, I'm just going off of reputation.
Sure, right? Sure.
There's going to be some other person that can never afford her that's going to need somebody like me because they can't get her. And I could come in bottom feeding.
Yeah.
Which to me would be like top feeding.
Yeah, right.
And, it's just like some people shop at Kmart, some people shop at like Bergdorf, but like, most of us are in the middle.
Yeah.
And somebody got to be like at the top of that middle. So I was just like, I'll be that guy.
Yeah,
I'm not going to get those things, but I'm not going to be doing like, you're DJing at your garage sale either. So like, let me take the top of the middle.
Yeah.
The aspirational middle where I can still play into the high end if I need to, but I'm not so removed from where I came from that I can't go back home, if you know what I mean.
Right.
For to use that expression. And so that's what I did. But again, I was the beneficiary of of DJing getting cool. And then a couple of things happened like post that. Not only was DJing now cool, and I have the thing I've talked about, I call it the airplane test, where when I used to sit next to people on airplanes, I was a DJ, they would talk to me for like 5 minutes. And then I got to the point where I tell people I'm DJing, they'd talk to me like the whole fucking flight.
Yeah,
right. I go by like the noise cancellations.
Yeah.
And it was crazy, but I got so much work from the airplanes.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, dude, I have there's clients I have with me to this day that it's just friends that I like. I
really?
Mean, I could tell you, like Adobe, New York Times. I could go. I could. There's probably more.
Wow.
All from, you know,
just sitting
airplane
there.
Connections. Obviously, like I'm a good person. They're good people. We connect as humans.
Yeah.
But like these things happen from just happenstance. But I also don't believe how you make your luck. You know, I believe in, like, God and the universe and all those. Like, there's all these things.
Yeah.
But you got to take advantage of those moments
sure.
we have from an ethical and a holistic point of view. And,
yeah.
and that's what I did. So I was the beneficiary of not only DJing getting cool, but then I was the beneficiary of, like, brands now accepting DJs and brands accepting more cultural things. So it used to be, like, if you played a corporate event, which is what nobody even calls them that anymore. But that's what they called it.
Sure.
It was, you're playing Journey. And like Billie Jean.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
Donna
yeah.
Summer.
Right.
In fucking 2005, bro. Like, you know?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Now it's like, you know, then it was just like, wait, Jay-Z's a billionaire? Like, what? We're going to like play.
Yeah.
And also, again, I'm a beneficiary of my age. I'm very grateful to be the beneficiary of all these random happenstance occurrences. Now the people making these decisions are maybe 5 to 10 years older than me. So whereas when I was 25 and the guy was like 50 mm-hmm. making these decisions, he was just like, I just want to hear the Rolling Stones. I don't want to see a DJ. I want a Bob Marley cover band. Now I'm in my 30s, 33, 34, 35, 36. This guy's 45. So he might not have been raised in the culture like I was, where he
sure.
like, you know, memorized Tribe Called Quest lyrics and, you know, all that stuff. But he had Beastie Boys and Run DMC and NWA, and maybe in college he got the Chronic, whereas I got that at the beginning of high school.
Yeah.
But like he had, you know, and who knows, the guy still might be like a card carrying racist in his real life, a MAGA hat dude.
Yeah.
But like he had some exposure to diversity and to different music and to culture enough that when they go into like programming and visualizing a company culture and all that, having somebody playing a Drake song is not taboo. Like, whereas 10 years ago, somebody playing a Biggie song would have been taboo.
Right, yeah.
So that was great too.
Yeah.
So it wasn't just like you could DJ a party for Nike and play good shit. I could do a party for, I mean, I can't even tell you the amount of brands I work for that I'm playing stuff that I'm just like, I can't believe I get to play this here.
Right.
I'm so happy. But I never like post it because I don't want to like call it out.
Yeah, yeah, right, right.
You know, it's really cool. And so again, it's just those moments for me were key.
That's awesome.
I'm lucky, really.
Is there, do you have, and then, well, I want to talk about the next stage of
sure.
you in business, but just if I'm having a party, mm-hmm. what are like three songs? I like play these songs and people will be in a good mood.
Like, what's your party for?
Like, let's say.
Your 50th birthday party in 4 years?
Sure, sure, sure.
I would say, you know, you could play any Biggie song. You could play any Drake song.
Mm.
And then you could play any, like, Michael Jackson or Stevie Wonder song.
Yeah.
And then you fill that in with connective tissue to make it all make sense. So, you like, well, the way I would do it was I would play, like, the Drake song. And then the Drake song, he interprets so much international music. So then I would go into like some Afrobeat stuff or some like islandy stuff or whatever his flavor of the month is. But then I would find like, oh, somebody put like a Jay-Z verse over that like more like Afrobeat influenced Drake song. So I'm gonna play that. And then I'm like, oh, when you're thinking Jay-Z, then you can go like to the Biggie. But then I'll find like some version of a Biggie song where he sampled like Michael Jackson and I'll play the sample. But then I'll go in like a Michael Jackson
wow.
set. So like I'll make it all make sense.
Wow. That's I mean, you just gave away your formula, man. You're the secret sauce.
Get your box out. It's time.
So you, you know, and then I'll let you go soon because I know you have very pressing things, very important things, which is picking up your son. So.
I don't. Yeah, yeah. I have my son half the week, and I don't. Like, I literally move
heaven yeah.
and earth for him.
So we are not.
Shout out my son, Miles, the reason I do everything. I love that dude.
Awesome. So, we've talked so much about you doing work for, you know, all these different corporations mm-hmm. and businesses, but you have gotten into investing
yeah.
and helping launch and create companies and supporting them. So what was that transition like and what do you get from it? What's your...
Oh, it's great, man.
Yeah.
It's so, for me, it was like, I started DJing a lot of events for tech companies and venture firms and all sorts of stuff. And I just got exposed to that earlier on than some. And then I had like the business acumen to like understand it.
Mm.
And I had the self-development to want to learn it. And so I was like, oh, this is really cool. Like, this is, again, this is also the beneficiary of the entrepreneurial bubble, what we talked about before. My dad was a small business owner. He wasn't an entrepreneur. He was a failed small business owner. You know, these guys are failed entrepreneurs, and they're on the cover of your magazine, and they lost $1 billion, and they make the cover.
Yeah.
Like, my dad just had to go work for somebody else, and we just ate at Hardee's. I don't even know if that still exists. Like, it was a totally different, you know, thing, but it was the same shit, right? It was just different times and different perceptions and different, you know, cultures. And so I started being around a lot of interesting tech people, a lot of interesting entrepreneur people. People like, hey, we're starting this. What do you think? I'm like, oh, this is cool. I like this. Like, maybe you should do this. Have you thought about this? Oh, I know this person. You should do this. And I'm like, oh, I'm helping you.
Mm.
Oh, my relationships help you. Oh,
right.
You know. And at the same time, I started reframing how I look at myself as an entrepreneur. Like, I DJ 6 hours a week. I work 70 hours a week.
Right.
That doesn't add up.
Yeah.
I started adding up the salary with the DJ hours, and I was like, holy shit, I make $74 billion a second, right? And then I was like, why am I not rich?
Yeah.
why is my kid's school hard for me to pay?
Yeah,
what's going on here? And there are some other personal issues that contributed to that too. But like, we won't go there. But, you know, I was like, holy shit, if you average this out across the whole diaspora of what it is I do.
Yeah.
You know, I still have a really well-paid hourly rate, but it's not what people pay me. I'm like, oh my God, we paid you all this for 2 hours. Like, no.
Yeah.
You three people are paying me that for 2 hours each, but that's going across like 70, 80 hours.
Right.
Flights, meetings, podcasts, interviews, travel, invoicing, because, you know, you name it, research, you know, it was a full-on thing.
Yeah.
And but what happened through that was I realized I was building a business.
Mm.
And my product was me showing up for a couple hours a night, but my business was me.
Right.
Also now, again, beneficiary, lucky, social became popping. Mm-hmm. So it was like, okay, now I can share what it's like being the business of me. Mm-hmm. We've all done it. And everyone, I mean, this helps you do yours. Like, Jason's a master at it across the hall. Like, you know, it's like people can do that now. So I'm like, let me share that version of me in a way that doesn't cannibalize the art of what I do at night. But because entrepreneur stuff's cool, because social cares, because personal branding is cool, because brands want to pay people now to be authentic, like, I was able to be a beneficiary of that. So, when I became that entrepreneurial DJ guy, it kind of like, not only can I make you feel like great at night with the party, but I could go have breakfast with you guys at the next morning and talk about real shit.
Yeah.
And, so that led to lots of interesting deal flow.
Mm.
And, you know, I'm in like, seven, well, one sold, so back to, I'm in six companies now, and I had a nice win last year with Anchor. It got bought by Spotify.
Yeah.
My kids, Harvard, will thank me.
Yeah.
For 15 years, you know, hopefully if the markets stay good.
Yeah, and, wow.
It's not just like for me, like the money aspect of it, because I'm not putting in like hundreds of thousands. I don't have, that's not my life, you know, but I can add value, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, if I know a lot of people, and so if I can help you in that way, then ultimately it's going to help me. And ultimately what I found, too, was I meet so many interesting people from these experiences that I have this is a really unique hack. And I always tell my friends that are, like, you have to have a tangible public creative skill that people want to fuck with, like a DJ, or, like, if you're, I tell my friends that are, like, celebrity chefs, like, you should be doing what I'm doing. You know, I don't tell that many other DJs it, though everyone's going to listen. Buy that box and then go invest. But if you have a skill that is a publicly consumable skill that's aspirational that people want, like I do, and you are investing in companies, you by default are going to become a beneficiary of your network. And by that I mean, if you sell insurance and you invest in a startup and 20 other people invest in that startup, you're going to ultimately know the other people on the cap table. Maybe you meet them once, you're on an email. Nobody's going to buy fucking insurance from you, dude. It's just not going to happen. I mean, it's just not.
Right.
But look at my job. I'm quote unquote cool. Not really cool. My kid tells me every day I'm not cool. He's like, Daddy, you're very much not a good dancer, and you're just an okay DJ. But you're my favorite daddy. And I'm like, who's your fucking other daddy? Right? So that's a whole other story. But like, I'm the guy on the cap table that people actually want. Oh, that's kind of cool. I went, hey, founder A, can you introduce me to investor?
Right.
I'm always at the bottom. So investor Z, right? Because I want to know him.
Yeah.
And almost in all my investments, I've either gotten a relationship out of it or a gig out of it or some press out of it.
Yeah.
Or I mean, worst case, God forbid, a human being, friend. All my things, it's almost like buying into a social club of smart people with way more money than me.
Wow.
And then maybe at the end of the day, you get a pot of gold.
Yeah.
Maybe you don't, but it's all also brand building.
That's
And I invested in a wine company called Wink, and now I drink way too much wine, so it's also invested in that. So that's been great.
You didn't bring any of that in the plastic bag?
I'm going to send you a bottle.
All right. Well, that's amazing. And what I was going to ask you, but you just answered it, was, you know, you've been this one-man business for so long, mm-hmm. and I wondered what the difference was to be like, I'm part of this bigger thing, mm-hmm. And just sort of watching that thing steer itself to some degree. You're involved with it, but it's not
awesome.
What's a, yeah, okay. it's nice.
It's like all the perks, now the responsibility.
Yeah you know, there you go.
If I'm walking through Midtown, I'm near somebody's office and I gotta pee, I could just go there because I know the toilet's clean. You're gonna let me in, but I don't have to do any of the work. It's that's fucking great. But I can still put it on my email signature. Phenomenal.
Well, I mean, having somewhere to pee, I think...
Now I have your office, now I come up here.
Yeah, now you come here, and I can't think of a better note to end on, because I know you gotta go get Miles, and I appreciate you coming in, and...
Thank you.
All the stuff you've said is really awesome, and I'm going to dig up that DJ in a box, because I think I still got a shot.
Can I add something real quick before we go? I'm working on a really interesting concept that I just want to, like, tease out to your listeners, because this is like such an awesome podcast. It's going to be starting probably April or May, and we're going back and forth with a couple names on it right now. But I've already done some preliminary interviews. We're doing a podcast, probably via the Anchor Spotify situation, because I was an investor in that. But where I basically everything we just talked about. Kind of like analyzing that with different people in the business community, where I'm speaking to CEOs and CMOs of brands we all love about what their version of my story was, right?
Oh, that's cool.
Because I've had a lot of these guys say to me, man, I wish I could have just, I was you at 18, 19,
right.
20, and then I went this way. And, you know, I went the other way, right? And I kind of course corrected and we end up in the same spot now.
Sure.
But we had the same influences, and we had the same, you know, saving up your money to buy some Jordans or listening to Biggie rap about his hustle and how that inspired you. And all these guys, black, white, male, female, everybody has some version of that from a cultural touch point. And I've been, you know, talking to a lot of these people about sharing their stories and like the fun, you know, I don't want to know about your financial statements, and I don't want to know about your, you know, EBITDA or whatever that word is and all that. I don't give a fuck. I want to know about... Man, when you had to get your part-time job to buy those Jordans, like, how has that impacted you now when you look at your company and you're just like, man, how do we stretch this budget? Like, how did that do that? And all those guys have those stories. So I'm talking to, like, CMOs and venture capitalists and founders and some really cool people
are
coming on board. And then it's going to be really interesting.
So you don't have a name for it yet, but so people who want to know about it, like, what would be a good way to find out about it?
The best way to follow, to get everything that I'm doing is basically via my Instagram, which is the easiest thing. I have Twitter, too, which is I am Mick, but my Instagram is just Mick, M-I-C-K.
Wow.
Four letters. It's very easy. And it's like, it's all things Mick.
All things
and,
Mick.
It will be on there. You know, obviously, I'm excited to share this on there as well. But please, you know, follow me and stay tuned on that. Because I do think if you like what you guys talk about here, which is so, it's kind of like the cousin of that, you know.
That's awesome.
So thank you for letting me plug that.
Yeah. No, I can't wait to hear it. That's fantastic. Well, my friend, this has been awesome. It's been great hearing your story and just all the awesome stuff that's on the horizon. So thanks so much.
Thank you.
All right.
That's our episode, folks. Hope you enjoyed it. Get a Real Job comes out every Tuesday. So be sure to subscribe to us on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, or wherever you harvest your favorite podcasts. Leave us a review. Give us a share. Don't make me beg people. Go to entrepreneur.com for new episodes of this and to listen to our other great podcasts. Thanks.